The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. Shavua Tov, how are you?
Boker Tov, Shavua Tov, Chodesh Tov. The Muslim world has come together in a rare show of unity today,
right.
Actually late yesterday. And they all agreed on one thing. And the thing that they all agreed on is that today is not Ramadan. So they were all searching out for the new moon late yesterday, and the official declaration was made that the new moon was not sighted. So I'm guessing that Ramadan will officially begin
tomorrow.
Today. Tonight, tomorrow,
right.
With the sighting of the new moon. But I am told that there was a lot of inspection going on yesterday for the fact that they suspected that they might sight the new moon yesterday, but it wasn't the case. And just a little update for people who have been thinking about the possibility of traveling to Israel. It is now possible for people who are not Israeli citizens to travel to Israel, but only if they are first-degree relatives to people who actually live in Israel. So that's the new situation at the moment, and we're talking about not only vaccinated foreign nationals but also even unvaccinated foreign nationals.
Okay, because that's quite a big difference then. We thought, I was under the impression you had to be vaccinated, but you're saying not.
Apparently, it is possible to come if you are unvaccinated. Obviously, you will have to submit yourself to quarantine if you are unvaccinated when you get here. But you have to make a special application to the Israeli consulate, setting out who your first degree relative is and what the reason for your visit is. This was really designed mostly to accommodate people who wanted to attend family functions, weddings, bar mitzvahs, births of children, and things like that. So there needs to be some sort of a situation that would justify your visit. They're not just freely giving away passes for people to visit. But the messages that I've seen suggest that you have to have all this documentation. There's quite extensive documentation that's required in order to provide the proof that you are a first degree relative. And if you don't have the documentation, then it'll be held up in all kinds of bureaucracy. But on the basis that you have everything together, the permits can be granted relatively quickly, according to some of the articles that I've read about the process. Not simple, but at least possible at the moment.
Well, that is good news. That is really, really great news. Very, very interesting news development over the weekend, of course, Anthony, and that is the situation with regard to the nuclear facility in Iran. That Israel is widely being blamed for that incident that took place at the Natanz nuclear reactor. That was yesterday. Let's start from the beginning. What actually happened there?
So according to the reports, and the reports seem to be fairly consistent, even the reports that come out of Iran itself, but the reports have shown that there was some sort of an incident which effectively damaged the power supply facilities at the Natanz nuclear reactor. Now, Natanz is the main nuclear site in Iran. It's situated with relative close proximity to Tehran. I understand something like 200 kilometers or thereabouts from Tehran. And apparently yesterday, some sort of a fire broke out. There was an explosion even of some sort at the Natanz nuclear facility. There was a major power cut. Articles that I've read are suggesting that this incident could have put the Iranian nuclear program back by 9 months. So this is not just any old, well, we had a blowout of one of the circuits a light bulb blew. It's not of that sort of nature at all. This is a major incident which has put Iran on the back foot and seriously set back their nuclear program. And, the timing is not coincidental by any stretch of the imagination, because we know that, for example, the discussions were taking place last week in Vienna with a view to the U.S. rejoining the Iranian nuclear deal. And Iran was really flexing its muscles at the same time by announcing that it's activating some of the more advanced centrifuges that they have, the nuclear agreement that was entered into by the countries, the European countries and the US, P5 plus one countries with Iran, allowed Iran only to use the first generation IR-1 centrifuge. But since then, Iran also has a different and more advanced centrifuges in the form of IR-6 and IR-9 centrifuges. And these more advanced centrifuges allow Iran to enrich uranium up to 50 times faster than the IR-1s that were contemplated in the nuclear agreement. And last week, Iran announced quite publicly and without any issue or shame that they would be beginning to activate the IR-6 and the IR-9 centrifuges that effectively shorten the amount of time that it would take for Iran to get the necessary highly enriched uranium, which it would require or which it could potentially use to build a nuclear bomb. And so Israel was obviously very, very sensitive to this particular development and also sensitive to the fact that Iran seemed to have some of the upper hand in those discussions that were taking place with the US and the other countries in Vienna last week, because effectively what Iran was saying was, we are firing up our more advanced centrifuges. If you guys don't want to lift sanctions on us, which is really the reason that they were around that table in Vienna in the first place, was to negotiate the lifting of sanctions that the US, the Trump administration, had effectively imposed on Iran. So they were saying, if you are not prepared to lift these sanctions, we are going to fire up these more advanced centrifuges, allowing us to get to that nuclear bomb so much more quickly. And lo and behold, we wake up this morning and we discover, or actually the news broke already during the course of yesterday, and then we discover that their attempt to fire up these more advanced centrifuges have apparently now been delayed by at least 9 months as a result of this major incident. It obviously puts Iran very much on the back foot, because now they don't really have the power, that flex that they were trying to exercise in the discussions with the US and the other countries over the course of last week. So, this is along the lines of the 2010 incident, where we discovered that Iran had been, nuclear program had been attacked by the Stuxnet virus, which at that stage caused, I think, 20% of Iran's centrifuges to effectively tear themselves apart and were destroyed. So that also set the nuclear program back quite significantly. At that stage, of course, Israel was also very much blamed for the incident. And quite interesting how the Israeli security system has responded to these accusations, which effectively have initially come out of the United States. But interestingly, Iran has acknowledged the incident and has called it nuclear terrorism. There's a new term for us for 2021, nuclear terrorism. You've become a nuclear terrorist now. You blow up, if you explode the power supply to a nuclear program facility, you're a nuclear terrorist. So that was the term that was used. And so this is an acknowledgement by Iran, effectively, that they have been sabotaged and that something quite serious has happened. And, from the reports that I've read, a way that this was carried out was apparently via cyber. Now, I don't exactly know how they would be able to access the power facilities, the power supply, via the cyber network, but we leave it to the powers that be, who know how these things work. Quite a number of Israeli politicians and also members of the security services have alluded to Israel's involvement without necessarily saying it in words of one syllable, but they've certainly made a reference to it. Prime Minister Netanyahu himself making an indirect comment, which could quite easily be interpreted and has been interpreted to acknowledge Israeli involvement in this particular incident. Very, very different from the old days when Israeli politicians and security people were very silent about these issues. There's a lot of evidence, gathering, which I think points towards Israel's involvement in some way or another. I did we spoke about the fact that Israel is not going to sit on its hands and just watch these developments as Iran just continues to flagrantly transgress all of the terms of that agreement, which they claim still to be part of, even though the U.S. withdrew itself from the agreement, but unashamedly transgress those terms. And, you know, it was obvious that Israel was not going to sit by and just simply watch that. And my favorite comment from social media about this incident is that the recommendation to the Iranian nuclear program is that they should think about changing their mezuzahs.
I absolutely love that. Yeah, because all this bad luck, it just keeps happening.
Terrible,
over
isn't
and
it?
Over again. Yeah. That is an absolute classic. What do we know about the American involvement or knowledge about this?
We don't know very much at all about American involvement. I imagine that the Americans probably would have known about this. And in all honesty, something like this doesn't just happen overnight. One imagines that this has been planned for weeks and months and maybe even longer, you know, infiltrating, understanding how the system works, developing the technology in order to get there remotely and safely without risking life or limb, you know, understanding what the significance is, getting right to the heart of the issue, the place that can really cause maximum damage, get the maximum bang for your buck, as they like to call it. So I'm imagining that this particular incident has been planned already for some time, and it was all just a matter of when to push the button. Now, interestingly, the button was pushed yesterday exactly at the same time that the American Secretary of Defense arrived for a visit in Israel. And, you know, again, we have a situation where an American senior politician has arrived in Israel in the form of Lloyd Austin, who's the Secretary of Defense in the new Biden administration. He arrived in Israel yesterday, apparently, to talk about what's happening with Iran, because we've seen all of this naval warfare going on, all these attacks on Israeli and Iranian ships out at sea. And all kinds of other things happening in the background. And of course, we know that Israel is very, very, very unhappy with the discussions that have been happening in Vienna and the Biden administration's desire to rejoin the Iranian nuclear agreement and potentially therefore lift the sanctions that were imposed upon Iran by the Trump administration. And Israel has been absolutely clear in opposing that. And of course, Lloyd Austin arrived yesterday, supposedly, to discuss all of that. And of course, he's walked right into a storm. Not that fingers are really being pointed at the US at the moment, but it would surprise me a lot if Americans didn't know about it. And,
well, I would say from the point of view, sorry, Anthony, just to interrupt you, from the point of view of potentially embarrassing the Americans alone, I think it would have been unlikely that they would have waited for him to arrive and then hit that button whilst he was in Israel without him knowing. Because they could have waited. They could have done it a day before or a day after. That wouldn't have put him in the same position. That alone would make me assume that the Americans were fully knowledgeable about this.
Well, I imagine that the Americans were fully knowledgeable about it. I also imagine that Israel would probably have preferred to have done this exactly as Lloyd Austin was stepping foot off the plane. But as always with these things, one day before and one day after doesn't necessarily have the same significance and doesn't necessarily offer the same opportunities. These things are so finely timed to coincide with a whole myriad of events that might be going on around. There might even have been consideration about personal safety of the people who actually manned that facility, and the fact that there might have been nobody there at the time and they wanted to choose exactly the hour that wouldn't, you know, harm innocent individuals who simply are electrical workers at the facility. I'm not really quite sure what the considerations would have been, but inevitably these things are so finely timed to coincide with a whole series of things coming together that they decided to push the button in spite of the fact that Lloyd Austin happened to come to Israel. That would be my guess if I was to speculate about all of this.
It's really fascinating. How long is he there for? And are there other subject matters that they're going to be dealing with?
I mean, no doubt that there are a number of things that that Israel and the U.S. would wish to talk about. You know, the Biden administration seems to be reversing on many of the things that the Trump administration put in place, which Israel considered to be very favorable to its interests. And of course, now that Biden has decided that he wants to, for example, reinstate the funding of the Palestinian Authority, which the Trump administration had cut off. So I'm sure that there's a discussion to hold about that. Not only the discussions around Iran, which I'm sure will also occupy much of the time, and the discussions between Lloyd Austin and the Israeli Minister of Defense, Benny Gantz. And also, I have no doubt that Prime Minister Netanyahu will be involved in those discussions. Mm. But also, there is so much Israeli and the U.S. Defense cooperation that's gone, that goes on, whether it's funding of defense initiatives, whether it's development of new technologies, whether it's the Americans supporting Israel in various ventures in different places, joint military activities that go on, and many, many other interests, whether there's, you know, threat from Yemen, whether it's the relationship with Saudi Arabia, the growing relationship between Israel and Saudi Arabia, even though that has not yet broken out into a peace agreement. But we know that there is a lot of cooperation which is being channeled through the U.S. As well. And it wouldn't surprise me, by the way, if the Saudis even might have had some knowledge of this attack that was carried out on Iran yesterday, because there are some speculations that Israel might even have been involved on the ground rather than just remotely. And if Israel and Israelis were there, either in the air or on the ground, it may well have been that Saudi Arabia had given overfly rights for Israeli aircraft to get towards Natanz and to get towards that Iranian target. So some fascinating things to start off our week of celebrations ahead of Yom HaTzmaut. You know, let's hope that the news continues to be good this week for all of us.
Absolutely right. It is 8 o'clock, almost 8:01. Anthony Reich, thank you. As always, we'll catch you tomorrow morning once again at 7:45.